I want this car.
Jonathan Miller would never do anything to break the law.
I need the keys. Thank you. Bye.
He is a very fine, very honest gentleman.
Something strange is happening to some ordinary people.
Yeah, that's Jack. Real nice man. What'd he do, rob a bank?
He's a law-abiding taxpayer minding his own business. Killed 12 people, wounded 23 more, stole 6 cars, most of them Ferraris. If anybody deserves to go that way, sure the hell's him. I worked homicide for 13.
Okay. How you doing out there? How you doing? It's December the 14th, 2019. And it is approximately 6 p.m. And that trailer segment was from a movie from 1987 with starring, one of the characters was Kyle MacLachlan. Good old Kyle played an alien detective on Earth searching for a parasite that was infecting people. This parasite, all it really wanted was cocaine and hookers and guns and Ferraris. Can you blame it for wanting the hookers and the cocaine, the Ferraris and the fucking guns? Sounds like Saturday night in Little Saigon. And it is Saturday night in Little Saigon. It's Saturday night, and I'm drinking my Nescafe, just FYI. Drinking my Nescafe. Taster's Choice, French roast, freeze-dried, probably using chemicals that are similar to the stuff they use for, like, dry cleaning. Yes, I'm enjoying my Nescafe. I had, you know, a fair amount of my Gumptic stew today. Gumptic stew contains one can of kidney beans, you know, drained of the fluids that come with the kidney beans. I don't know what it is. Could be monkey sperm. So you drain the monkey sperm from the can of kidney beans. Then you add approximately 1.5 cups of elbow noodles. And then you add a can of tomato sauce. What the hell? And then you add that curry mix they sell at the grocery outlet. I said Grocery Depot in a podcast. Errata. I meant the grocery outlet. Yep, you get the special curry mix from Grocery Outlet that contains extra amounts of MSG. Perhaps that's why it ended up at Grocery Outlet. You know, when I worked on a ship in the Gulf of Alaska in 1993, the Filipino cooks called MSG Asian magic. Anyways, yes, the trailer from the movie Hidden, 1987. I remember going to see this with some friends of mine. Good friends from high school. Such good friends, I will keep them nameless because I don't want them to be marred by my insanity. But I think we saw it at the Lido or one of the downtown... No, I think we saw it at the new theater. The one that was... Yeah, the new theater. Yeah, the new one that was not far from Sager's or something. Don't get me started on Sager's. That was a fine restaurant. I do not know if it still exists. I haven't been back to Mount Vernon since my 30-year high school reunions. Yeah, 30 years. You know what happens after 30 years? You ask yourself, how are any of us still alive? There's no explanation. No explanation. Anyways, before we go too deep into today's main topic, and sadly, it's going to dovetail all of the current conversations and perhaps extend on the current conversations around a potential financial crisis that is currently building in both China and probably the United States. So before we go any further, I'm going to read an article from Zero Hedge. Let me go ahead and copy this out really quick, if that's okay with you. I should have had this set up for the show if I was special, but I'm not special. I'm just regular. Headline, and again, this is the writer Tyler Durden, which again is a made-up name, but Tyler Durden, by Tyler Durden, published today at around 8 p.m., so not that long ago, folks, because you know it's 6 p.m. today on December the 14th, 2019, so if it was 8 p.m., it's in the future, which means Eastern Standard Time, which is the future. The future of rock and roll. Yeah. Headline: China's moment of reckoning arrives. 38 billion state-owned giant announces largest dollar bond default in two decades. 2 weeks ago, we previewed what we said would soon be a D-Day for China's bond market. I need to sip a little Nescafe. For China's bond market. As a massive commodities trader and global 500 state-owned enterprise was set for an unprecedented bond default, which means, if you don't know what it means, a bond default, it means they could not pay. As of last week, this historic default is now in the history books after Tiwu, I hope I'm saying that right, Tiwu, the closely watched Chinese commodities trader, became the biggest dollar bond defaulter among the nation's state-owned companies in two decades. In what Bloomberg called a moment of reckoning for Beijing as China struggles to contain credit risk in a weakening economy, as bond defaults hit an all-time high and are set to keep rising in the coming years. Last Wednesday, Tiwu Group announced results of its unprecedented debt restructuring, which saw a majority of its investors accepting heavy losses, and which, according to rating agencies, qualifies as an event of default. That's important, folks. I'm going to take a pause here, but you know those companies like Moody's and Fitch, the quote-unquote rating companies that keep everything so honest? What a bunch of bullshit. Anyways, if they do their jobs correctly, they're supposed to say when, in fact, a bond or other security in a similar context has been defaulted upon. They're supposed to say when the default occurs, because guess what? This triggers credit default swaps. Yeah, CDS. Anyways, continuing. As a result of the default, until recently seen as virtually impossible for a state-owned company, investors' perceptions are undergoing a dramatic U-turn about government-owned borrowers whose state ownership had for years offered an ironclad sense of security. Remember what I just read, folks. No more. The fact that a state-owned enterprise such as Tiwu has now defaulted on repaying its dollar bonds in full confirms that Beijing will no longer bail out troubled SOEs, that's state-owned enterprises, let alone private firms, perhaps due to the strains imposed by the economy, which while growing at just below 6%, bullshit, is slowing the most in three decades. That's probably true. It also raises concerns over the Chinese province of Tianjin, where Tiwu is based, following a series of rating downgrades and financing difficulties suffered by some of the city's state-run firms. The metropolis near Beijing also has the highest ratio of local government financing vehicle bonds to GDP in China. Okay, so local government financing. That's a little bit of this shadow banking stuff, the hidden stuff, the stuff that occurs both above the water, but also the stuff below the water. And yeah, I don't know if I'm going to read the rest of this, but here's the long and the short of it. Tiwu defaulted on this debt. That also implies logically that once the ratings firms say this is a default, credit default swaps get triggered. And guess what, folks? Tiwu is big, but I seriously doubt they've been the only serious, you know, default in the last few months. They might be the biggest so far. Which means that. What does that mean? Well, okay. The other day we talked about Zoltan Pozsar and his predictions about short-term rates and what they might mean in terms of liquidity available to banks to continue operations, aka to avoid the financial apocalypse. So Zoltan says this is a problem and it probably means more quantitative easing is coming. Lots of people are proposing, in addition to myself, that Powell might just use the repo operations as a way to do QE. Why not? People are just fucking confused about this. They don't know what the fuck's going on. I truly think if they use the phrase quantitative easing at this point, it would only be bad. So they're crooks. The crooks aren't going to be that stupid. So I think, yeah, maybe they use the repo markets as a way to inject massive amounts of liquidity into the banking system to keep it afloat. That very well could happen. It is probably what's happening right now. But here's the deal, folks. A lot of companies, a lot of investment firms, a lot of mutual funds, a lot of hedge funds, and guess what? A lot of pension funds have money in China. So you need to think about that before I continue. The last few days, I've said that maybe the current scenario we're in is what's called the crack-up boom scenario for the U.S. and probably much of the world. But that's a big maybe because that assumption is based on the idea that China and the U.S. are only pretending to be adversaries in this trade war. That in fact is a little bit of fiction. That is theater. That is kind of the assumption. But guess what? I read this article today. And the first thing that occurred to me is that one of the great strategies throughout history, and this applies to chess, this applies to football, this applies to baseball, this applies sometimes to investing, although it can be kind of a tricky business and very dangerous. But it definitely applies to business in general sometimes. One of the best strategies throughout history is to sacrifice one of your own, to sacrifice a resource, to sacrifice a pawn or a player, so to speak, because in the process of sacrificing, you gain some advantage. Now, here's the deal, folks. In the current situation between China and the U.S., China doesn't really get a lot of advantage by saying, we're not buying your stuff. It's just the math doesn't pencil, folks. China is and has been the manufacturer for a lot of junk for the planet for about 20 years, maybe technically 30. But they've also been consuming a lot of shit. And in order to do that, well, it takes money, okay? And it also takes the ability to raise the money, and it also means you don't really want to have a really bad trade war. I don't think China wants a trade war, but just assume for the sake of argument, because again, this is the great discontinuity, folks, and I told you this before. From day to day, the most likely function that you're on can change. I still think the most likely function in terms of strategy for Trump and Powell is to trigger a crack-up boom. The difference is I don't think China is their ally in this venture any longer, and it's worse than that. I think China might be using state-owned enterprises to trigger financial contagion. And let me explain what I mean by that. Credit defaults, what is a credit default swap? Well, technically it's a derivative product, which means that it's not really based on an asset. It's based upon, it's really based upon the implied ownership of the asset, but really, it's really secondary to the asset. It's about the asset, but not really intrinsic. So if there's a house, if there's a car, if there's a plane, derivatives don't tend to be about the plane. They tend to be about the financial products associated with the plane. Does that make sense? So, for example, if I take out a loan to buy a plane, okay, let's say I do that, then a company might decide to pick up my loan, and in some arbitrage, maybe a market arbitrage, maybe a FX arbitrage, it's hard to say, but they might in fact take that loan, which really is nothing, it's just pixie dust, it's not the actual airplane, and they would create another financial product on top of it. Maybe it becomes a wager on whether or not the loan will be repaid. If you saw the movie The Big Short, one of the core themes about that movie was this idea that the debts that were outstanding, that were buttressing mortgage-backed securities and all of those financial instruments, that those debts were not going to be paid. And if those debts are not paid, everything that those debts are based upon, everything that is based on them, every financial structure that utilizes those debts as a foundation. Because again, banks believe debts are assets, folks. You have to understand, for a bank, a debt is an asset, right? It is an asset. But what if in reality it's not? What if it's just make-believe? Here's the thing, folks. If a company or a government takes out a bond, they can in fact purchase insurance, but they can do it, and they can do it by purchasing potentially a credit default swap, one side of it, but they can also, for example, they can participate in markets where these things occur. So the credit default swap becomes a part of the activity, not necessarily a part that is intended. And if the bond fails, there is a payment that must be made. Okay, there is an ultimate payment. There is a other side to that bet. Okay, while the bond is succeeding, okay, and this is important, folks. This is why people participate. While the bond is succeeding, the credit default swap pays you. You get paid on a certain basis for success, for not failing. But once you failed, you have to pay out. Now, the problem is that whenever people envision this, they never envision either total enterprise or systemic failure. In fact, a lot of the theory this is based upon goes back to the 70s and a lot of mathematics. And the fundamental argument is that you'll never have everyone fail at the same time. Now, the problem is that these instruments have hidden connections. You know, a company might hold on to a bad bond, and when that bond fails, they might hope to get some sort of a payment, for example, maybe because they held a credit default swap or something. Maybe they did hold some type of insurance. But what if the company that is delivering on the insurance doesn't pay out? What if they too are failing? This is what happened in 2008, folks. Okay? It wasn't the case that there was someone who could hold the bag. There was really no last bag holder. And once this begins, the question is, where does it stop? If you ask yourself, how much debt is there in the world right now? Well, above the water debt worldwide, which means public debt, you know, private debt, and let's not include anything beyond that, just the basic debt. Arguably, it's north of $500 trillion worldwide. And that's the above water debt. The below water debt, the hidden markets, you know, default swaps and insurance contracts and derivatives, all these implied bets that are supposed to work out. Some people have said that that total market might be in the vicinity of 3 to 4 thousand trillion or 3 to 4 quadrillion. Now, to put that in some perspective, I think the current world economy is still in the vicinity, like the whole world economy is still somewhere around 80 trillion a year, something like that. The United States is roughly 18, 19 trillion GDP. The world is more or less, I think, 80, plus or minus. At any interest rate that is non-trivial, the above-the-water liabilities probably never get paid off. And the below-the-water stuff definitely never gets paid off. So here's the thing, folks. What if China, and again, I'm not an expert in investing. Let me just say that up front. I'm not an expert. This is just a hunch. But what if China's playing a scenario, And number one, part of this assumption is that my other assumption is false, that China and the U.S. are not working together on this trade war bullshit, that the trade war is real. But China wants to avoid the tariff spiral, and maybe they even want to avoid the currency war part of it, which has only really just begun. I mean, the currency war part of it can get a lot fucking worse, folks. And it may be unavoidable that there is some sort of a currency war and currency collapse. I think it is unavoidable. And the other thing, too, is China likes to be slick. I'm not trying to be mean. Everyone says it's kind of racist, but China's China has, in the last 50 years, been relatively clever when it comes to their foreign policy. And I think it's because they've been in this difficult situation. I don't think communism works. Chinese society has probably never really healed from Mao. And as much free enterprise as they have, they still have a lot of repression, and they're only kind of going more that direction, especially with the social credit bullshit. So let's think about this for a second. So China is definitely in a situation where they are at odds with us. They would like to escalate, but in a way that allows them to escalate without it being obvious that they're the ones that caused the problem. Well, guess what, folks? From what I've read, a lot of pension funds, a lot of hedge funds, a lot of funds in general have investments in China. And a lot of these investments are in the so-called rock-solid state-owned enterprises. And this is what's so funny. All of those enterprises are probably technically, philosophically state-owned. It's not a free society, folks. If the Chinese government wants to turn your company, your business, into a state-owned enterprise, I just think it's a matter of bullets. And whether or not you want your kids ending up in an operating room giving their organs to somebody who lives overseas. That's what I think. I think it's just a question of force. So this whole state-owned enterprise bullshit in a totalitarian society is a little bit of a fucking joke. Anywho, what if China is playing the game of sacrifice? What if they're making the decision to allow some firms to fail to trigger a wave of credit to basically trigger a credit default swap wave and to trigger other derivatives and to basically trigger a cascading financial event or contagion? Now, what does that mean? Well, one thing it means is evidence for this is going to be, well, forthcoming in a way, but if I'm right about this, it explains the repo market bullshit. It really does. Because I don't think this recent failure, this TWU failure, I don't think it's the first one. I think there's been a lot of sort of shadow failures out there brewing. And here's the thing, folks. Even if you can pay off the rating agencies, even if you can pay them off, and God knows they probably do, there's a point at which a bad bond results in people just not having money. Okay, a bad investment results in there being no economic resources to be extracted. Or another way to put it, even if you can convince people that a AAA bond is AAA and not junk, there are other organizations that tap into those funds, and those funds could disappear even if the bond is AAA. That's how fucked up the situation is, folks. So let's say the Chinese government has been progressively using small failures as a way to figure out what the impact would be. And what if they've kind of gauged it? Then here's the scenario. Because the thing is, the Chinese government has a history of dealing with instability. It may not be pretty, but for them it works, okay? It's a totalitarian society. So I think they're willing to accept a little bit of social instability if the effect is they crash the U.S. economy. And you say, well, Dan, how would that happen? Well, it happened two ways, basically. And it's really a double whammy. One way is that a lot of these pension funds and hedge funds, and frankly, who knows how much of the stock market, a lot of that just vaporizes. So in this scenario, you could definitely see a market collapse, and it could happen very fucking quickly. Because again, this is all make-believe shadow money, okay? How do you know it's going away until the giant balloon deflates? I think there's a Twilight Zone episode where there are these people in a little cabin in the woods, and there's this giant from another planet who's stalking them. He's got giant feet, giant arms, a giant head. He's like 200 feet tall, that fucking giant alien, scary as fuck. But then he starts to deflate because the Earthling uses his gun. And there wasn't much there, folks. There was just a tiny ship with tiny little people, scared shitless, that the giants, that we were the giants, would destroy them. What do you think is buttressing the U.S. economy? And let me be more specific. What do you think is buttressing Wall Street? If it isn't make-believe money, what the fuck is it? It's totally make-believe. And the problem with make-believe shit is that just as quickly as it can magic itself into existence like a 200-foot-tall alien, it can just as quickly deflate. And the worst part is, it could deflate and the alien could still look like it's there. It could be gone. It could be gone underneath the structure. Think of it like cascading failure when it comes to an airplane that has to maintain pressure. If you lose chambers, if you lose air pressure, that's okay. If you lose too much too quickly, the whole thing collapses. Okay, that's part of this whole thing about pressurizing at altitude. You want to maintain your structure. You do not want your structure to collapse. Well, here's the thing though. At what point does the collapse occur? Because what I can tell you is it's entirely possible that a whole bunch of shit on Wall Street right now is completely filled with nothing but toxic crap from China, and all of it's going bad. And would that explain the repocalypse, the repo situation? Of course it would, because people need to cover their fucking bets. That's, you know, derivatives, credit default swaps, it's a casino. These are bets. People make bets, and they hope they're going to get the payoff. But then sometimes it's a dud. Like long-term capital management in 1997, their bet did not work out, and they almost took down the whole world economy. Sometimes your bets work, sometimes they don't. But if you have an entire financial system based upon a casino, then you tell me what's there other than pixie dust, because I don't think anything is. So I still think Trump wants to trigger a crack-up boom, and I do think the trade war scenario was designed to sort of put the fingers on the fuel line, to sort of starve the U.S. economy of growth so that when you let go of the fuel line, it seems, holy fuck, good times again. I still think that's basically true. The difference is China may not want that, or they may not want it in that way. They may not want it on Trump's terms. So they may try to throw a monkey wrench in Trump's little situation and maybe even lose him the election. And here's how. They will allow, if I'm right, they're going to start to allow major Chinese state-owned enterprises strategically, and this is where you can do your research. It's going to be strategic. These are going to be enterprises that have a strong financial bi-directional connection to the United States, that are strongly associated with pension funds and hedge funds and all the fucking funds, all the chicanery, the entire fucking casino. I think the Chinese government's going to pick companies that strategically are connected to this daisy chain casino. And as they fail, it's going to take a lot of fucking money to fix things. And a couple things will start to happen also at that point. Chinese companies that hold U.S. treasuries, and including the government, they will have a perfectly legitimate excuse to do a massive redemption. So you could see a mass redemption of U.S. treasuries. That's number one. Number two, you could also see, at least short-term and probably short-term, a huge spike in the value of the dollar. And you say, well, Dan, that sounds weird. Are you saying that all of this financial failure and whatnot could trigger a dollar appreciation? Abso-fucking-lutely. Because there will be a flight to cash. There will be a flight to bonds, actually. Because as fucked up as it is, the United States is still that proverbial clean shirt. Okay, compared to everywhere else, including China. So it's entirely plausible that we see a U.S. dollar valuation spike. And you say, well, that's good. Well, not so much, because that impacts interest rates, absolutely. There's a limit to what the Fed can do, folks. And the Fed can do a lot. And maybe the system is totally crooked, which means it'll just be a crooked scenario. But you know that thing about the crack-up boom? How at some point, Gus, the guy at the Eccles Building, the guy working for Chairman Jerome Powell, You know Gus in the room with a button saying, "Repo, repo." Good old Gus is going to have a visit from Pal, if this is the scenario, and he'll say, "You know that brick I put on your desk? Will you just put the fucking brick on the button, go get some whiskey, and get drunk?" And that's when you will see, potentially, the value of the dollar head the opposite direction. And it's going to be whiplash. I'm telling you, it'll be whiplash. The dollar will spike. It might take a few months. It might even take half a year. The dollar will spike. And then all of a sudden, especially as the money printing occurs, there will be a loss of confidence. Like, people will realize that the Fed is using this as an opportunity to flood the market with dollars as a way to control the appreciation. It will have the effect of controlling the appreciation. It just won't be stable. And I think that would be a very catastrophic event. That would immediately go to whether or not the U.S. keeps its reserve currency status. So guess what? There is a play by which China can probably take us down in a way. And all they have to do is allow some of these state-owned enterprises, maybe many of them, who knows how many, just allow them to fail. And I think that would create absolute chaos in the U.S. Probably Europe too, to some extent, but I could also imagine Russia and Europe and China using this as an opportunity to get closer together. So who knows what happens next? I think there are probably people right now in the military-industrial complex who are probably telling Trump that if the United States does not go to war with China soon, in 10 or 20 years, there's not going to be an opportunity. And you know what, folks? This isn't just about Trump. You remember Obama's pivot to the Pacific? You remember that little thing? That was also about the U.S. emphasizing to China that we're still in charge. So it's not about Trump being a warmonger. He's not really that important, folks. The only party, the only political party on the Death Star is the war party. And the war party is probably telling Trump that Alderaan, aka China, will destroy us in 10 years, so we gotta destroy them first. Let's aim the Death Star at China. Ready, aim, fire, right? So in this scenario, things move too quickly for there to be an actual crack-up boom. In this scenario, you get to a very unstable place, both economically and politically. Keep in mind, there's a bad side to this scenario for China, too. There's a paper written by Professor Davies, 1962. Look it up. Title of the paper is "Toward a Theory of Revolution." I'm going to summarize it for you. Here's Davies' basic position. If you look at the quote-unquote French middle class between, let's say, 1689 and maybe 1750, roughly 1750, before some of the first major failed wars between France and Great Britain, the French middle class did pretty fucking well, actually, during that period. They saw their life, their situation improve greatly. As in terms of how you'd measure it in economic terms, their ability to have wealth, to generate wealth, it got better and better, you know, despite a kind of failed government in the sense that none of these medieval governments were very well equipped for the modern age. And so, yeah. And then in the 1750s and 1760s, the French government made some bad decisions. You know, Louis did this and Louis did that, and Louis was really stupid. And don't get me started on other types of chicanery. But the point is, by the time you get to the 1760s, 1770s, the French economy is actually kind of in the doldrums. Taxation as a portion of the economy is becoming repressive. And people that had seen their, you know, their general wealth improve for about almost a century were starting to see their wealth just collapse. Now here's the thing, folks. When you're on the other side of the mountain, looking down, Australian rappelling, as they say. When you're on the other side of the mountain, it doesn't fucking matter if your current altitude is still higher than where you might have been on the other side of the mountain going up, you know, 20 years ago. If someone makes the argument, you're still better off than you were 60 years ago, that argument doesn't work, people. That's Davey's point, is that when you're on the other side, it's irrelevant if you're quote-unquote better off. That's not how you see your situation. You see your situation as getting worse at a worse rate. That is your situation. It's not, I'm still better off than a guy was 100 years ago. Okay? So basically, Davies is saying that minor setbacks, like 10, 20%, which may not be minor really, but 10, 20%, a setback in a situation, a setback in wealth, a setback in prosperity, even if it doesn't reset in the way that you go back to 100 years ago, that setback can trigger revolution. And here's the basic idea. Societies that are poor historically and remain poor historically are generally fucking very stable. Societies that are rich historically and remain rich are generally fucking stable. Societies that go through rapid income transition actually are the ones that are very fucking unstable. Sorry. China has undergone this, just as an FYI, over the last 30 years. There is now a country in China that you could call the Chinese middle class. It's so big. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of people that, you know, 20, 30, 40 years before that would have had a very different life. So what Davies is saying is the following. As the difference, and think of this in mathematical terms, like there's two functions. There's a line function going up, and this is the perceived expectation, okay, the payoff. Think of it as the line of progress, a straight line going up. Everything keeps getting better and better. You know, this year I can afford one car. Next year I'll be able to buy two cars. That's that line. And then the other side is reality. So there's perception or expectation is a straight line. Reality is actually kind of a parabola. And when you get to the other side of the parabola and the delta between your expectations and reality starts increasing at an increasing rate, according to Davies, that's when you have social chaos. And if you look at the quote-unquote Arab Spring, it kind of follows the fucking playbook. It wasn't about people reading Marx and Thomas Jefferson. That was bullshit. That was a psyop. It was about, you know, doctors and lawyers driving taxis. It was about accountants being prostitutes. It's about families not being able to feed themselves when a year before they could. It's about people seeing their situation get worse. And it doesn't matter. You could say to a person in Egypt in 2012 or 2011, you could say in 2011, listen, don't you realize your situation is still better than it was 100 years ago? They're not going to fucking listen to you because they're not comparing their situation to 100 years ago. They're comparing their situation to their own fucking life. Wake the fuck up. So in this little strategy of China's, there is a potential pitfall, and that is they trigger, well, social disorder. And if you ask me, and I made this prediction back in 2011, and I stick with it, I thought it would be 5 years, but that's where I was wrong. If you ask me, some type of civil war in China is inevitable. It's just a question of when and how. And it's also possible that the civil war is avoided through actual war, because that's one way for a government, a failing government, to avoid a downfall. And that is to trigger a war with an external enemy, like the United States. So this scenario is way more unstable. It is a scenario where you do not have cooperation. So China and the U.S. are not working together. It is a real trade war. That makes it more unstable. It's also unstable because I think China is going to use a kind of backdoor strategy to fuck up the U.S. economy. And it's completely legit. I mean, it's not like it's not as if the word law even applies to the giant crocodiles. But there is no basic moral premise to say they can't do it. Okay, they're a totalitarian society. They don't have any moral premises. They're simply going to act. And if they decide they want to destroy a company so they can send a tidal wave into the U.S. financial markets, I think they'll do that. So here's the deal, folks. I am modifying the prediction a little about the whole crack-up boom. I still think that's what Trump wants, and I still think that's what he'll try to get Powell to give him. But it only works if he controls the board, and that means controlling the value of the dollar. It really only works if there's a way to print money in such a way that he can get his crack-up boom. The Chinese could fuck with that. They could fuck with the interest rate situation, and they could trigger so many defaults, so many failures, that whatever money Powell magics into existence will be simply used to pay people who are on pensions, to pay the retirees. Guess what? All the helicopter money in that scenario basically goes to pay people who are retired. That's and I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I can tell you this much, that isn't going to lead to quote-unquote household formation, okay? All that is the equivalent to what happened in 2008 and 2009, filling in holes, okay? So if China can trigger this, they can derail the crack-up boom scenario and go directly to the fucking boom, is my point. And there are people who will whisper in Trump's ear and say, you know what, if this gets worse, we're going to have a civil war here. And there'll be people in China who will start to maybe take this as an opportunity to throw off their own fucking chains. And the Chinese government, you know what, these people were kids, a lot of them. Young adults during the Cultural Revolution. Their parents experienced the Great Leap Forward. The current leadership cadre has seen the horrors of chaos in China. They know what it looks like, and they will probably do anything they can to avoid having little red dunce caps put on their heads and being marched about, you know, having kids shake their little red books at them, so to speak. I think they'd do anything they can. And in this scenario, it's more likely they end up hung by fucking piano wire. Because I don't think they're going to be so lucky to have a bunch of nice little Marxists this time. Enough of their victims, family members of victims whose organs have been harvested. Probably in a country like China, that number probably racks up to a core, or two or three divisions is my point. Yeah, you're not gonna satiate the hatred. When that hatred becomes unpent, when they get a chance to seek bloody revenge against their fucking dictators, it'll be a classic Chinese peasant rebellion with a lot of fucking firearms. And you say, but Dan, they don't have the right to keep and bear arms. Oh God, please don't be stupid. Throughout history, here's how you do it. You rob the guns. And if you don't think that people in China know how to steal guns or get guns, I think you're fucking crazy. Hell, they'll probably take one of the Norinco factories and start stamping out AK-47s left and right. If you have a will to get the guns, folks, and your system is failing, that means there's cops who will take bribes. That means there's soldiers who will take bribes. They will allow you to steal firearms. That's how systems fail, folks. They fail from the outside and the inside. It's kind of like that quote from the Spanish Civil War. You know that quote from the Spanish Civil War? There are four columns outside Madrid and a fifth column within. So the Chinese government, the current government, knows the stakes. They're not confused. They know the stakes. They know that there is no outcome by which they give up power and they don't end up in some really nasty situation. That is how much harm they have probably caused. There's going to be no truth and reconciliation, as if that worked in South Africa. And oh, by the way, I'll let you in a little fucking secret. They're not stupid. They watch the fucking news. They see exactly what's happening in South Africa. All that Mandela bullshit of how truth and reconciliation would end all the hatred and there'd be peace and love. Yeah, that didn't exactly fucking happen, actually. And so, yeah, these people aren't stupid. They know the situation. They know that they will likely, best case scenario, end up in a prison cell. So what do? If I were a dictator in China or part of a central committee, I would probably say, well, why don't we just ratchet things up and follow the general theory of escalation? And I think that's what they've done. And their next move in the game is a little bit under the surface, a little shady, a little slinky. They're going to trigger their own enterprises to fail, to trigger financial contagion. I actually think they might end up doing that. Like, I don't think this $38 billion failure in this bond with Tiwu is random or accidental, is my fucking point. I think the Chinese are sacrificing. And it's not a huge sacrifice, I don't think. Not from the perspective of a totalitarian government. I think they're choosing to do these strategic sacrifices to trigger contagion. And I know I'm emphasizing this, but I want you to think about it. What this means is that Powell will probably have to conduct, if he does stealth QE, it will be impossible to hide the numbers. The numbers will be that big. If this happens, you are going to see pension funds fail in the new year. I think you could see CalPERS fail. That's a big prediction. But I have been looking at CalPERS myself for several years now. There is nothing about it that is remotely sustainable, with the exception of all the fucking pixie dust. And what I'm talking about is an event that, like a wind, will blow away the pixie dust. And there'll be nothing there. And there'll be no money for retirees. And Powell, our good friend, federal chairman, blah, 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 he will be forced to debase the dollar. He will be forced to print dollars. He will be forced to do the crack up boom. Not over 3 years, but probably over 3 months. And you won't get the good part. The good part of everyone feeling like they're wealthy, that does not happen. All you will get is the boom. And then you'll wake up and you'll say, why the fuck did I just spend $100 for a fucking bottle of wine? And that's if you're fucking lucky. Because in that scenario, I think things don't go from bad to worse. It's a very unstable scenario. The problem with economic collapse scenario is it ultimately goes to this. Can you feed your family? If you cannot feed your family, it's fucking irrelevant how much money you have in your 401k. I'm not trying to be a dick, but it really is fucking irrelevant. And the problem with this scenario is it's going to come down to, will suppliers deliver? Will growers deliver food? Will the agricultural system as we know it hold together? Because food will be a big issue. And that applies to oil too, folks. For all this fucking, well, we're the new Saudi Arabia. That's a kind of load of shit. For one, a barrel of our shitty oil is about 15% less energy than a standard barrel of oil. That's number one. Number two, it's not even the right kind of fucking crude for most of the stuff we need. And number three, we cannot produce it at a price that supports a clearing price, which means there's no way for the market to clear properly. It's also one of the reasons why, right now, about the only thing keeping the shale people going is all this fucking make-believe money. Junk bonds. Lots of fucking investors who believe in this nonsense, and they are either purposefully on purpose by their own decision or being forced to throw good money after bad. Because shale makes no money. The only reason to keep shale going is if peak oil is real and we're going to run out and we're going to need whatever we can get, then okay, maybe it makes sense because then the government steps in and takes it over. And guess what? Oh, by the way, if we get this little scenario from China, probably best case scenario, shale becomes, yeah, government owned. One way or the other. It'll either be government owned by the government just buying everything up and then making us the sole shareholders in some government contraption like Fannie or Freddie. How awful is that? Or it simply will become a part of the U.S. government. Because the military, they need oil, folks. Even if it's shitty oil, they need oil. So we spent pretty much the whole freaking podcast on this topic. And I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I had another subject I thought would be funny. Thought it'd be funny. Maybe we can talk about it really quick. I had this idea for a sci-fi channel movie. You know the sci-fi channel, you have these weird fucked up movies. So I thought I might tell a story. A story about a scientist that in 1978 decided to meddle with nature. A story of a woman who was in love with her professor and then disappeared to write poetry. A story of a young brash reporter in the wilds of Oregon looking for a scoop. It's a story, folks, for the Sci-Fi Movie Channel. Now, here's the basic idea. The scientist dude wants to invent a new type of security animal because the Doberman pincer, whatever, fucking German Shepherds, fucking Pit Bulls, they're just not enough, man. They're just not enough. They're just not the right combination of creatures. And so this scientist decides, well, what if I took a grizzly bear? What if I took a grizzly bear and I gave it the head of a great white shark? What if I took a grizzly bear and gave it the head of a great white shark and, yeah, I'd give it some webbed feet, too. This would be a grizzly bear that could breathe on land but also in the water. Can you imagine a grizzly bear with webbed feet? Big 2,000-pound grizzly bear with webbed feet and the head of a great white shark? Can you imagine hundreds of those? Hundreds of these animals rushing towards your city. Wouldn't you use nuclear weapons? I would. The name of the movie is Bark. You know, Bark, B-A-R-K, the bear shark, the bark. And the idea is there was a great crisis. All the dogs died. Some sort of a virus killed all the fucking dogs. What were we going to do as humans? We needed an animal that would protect us in the middle of the darkness of the night. How would we find such a creature again? How could we do it? What if we could take a grizzly bear, Senator, and utilizing CRISPR technology and Kentucky Fried Crispy Chicken? What if we could utilize the CRISPR to take a grizzly bear, merge it with a great white shark? Can you imagine that shit, Senator? Can you imagine our enemies if they saw that shit running at them at 30 miles an hour? Covered in next grade carbon composite armor and rocket launchers and Gatling guns on each shoulder. Can you imagine that thing heading at you? Can you, Senator? Anywho, I wanted to just mention this story because I thought, you know what? I should write this up for the Sci-Fi Channel. I should put together a fucking, screenplay for Bark and see if they'd fucking make it. Because I gotta tell you, Bark would be a great movie and it would be filled with hijinks and you'd have that, you know, that idealistic, you know, go-getter, cub reporter looking for the big scoop. And you'd have the female love interest writing poetry and you have the evil scientist who might have a heart of gold. But like all scientists, he'll probably have to sacrifice himself in the end. And the woman poet ends up with the fucking reporter. And the scientist ends up in the grizzly stool. Can you imagine a grizzly bear with the head of a great white shark? What would you do if you saw that motherfucker in Little Saigon? What would you do? I can hear it behind me. Can you hear it running behind you? The patter of those heavy feet on the wet pavement? It's coming for you. Can you hear it? The hiss. If you like my podcasts and would like to support them, there will be a link to Venmo in the description of this podcast. There's also a link to Venmo on my SoundCloud homepage in the right-hand panel. And if you think you want to donate in other ways, I'm open. Though, frankly, I think the times are going to get very difficult for people to be that fucking generous. And here's the rule. Take care of yourself first. Take care of your family. Take care of your friends. If you have any money left over after taking care of those things and yourself and having enough money to, like, you know, buy some extra food and whatnot, and then you still have some cash and you really like my podcast, then feel free to donate. I'm not going to turn money away. Currently, this money is helping me sort of stay afloat. But it's not a lot yet, so we'll see. You donate what you want, as little or as much. If you are so very rich that you want to donate hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm not sure Venmo would accept it. But you could donate several thousand each month. And I don't know that you would be buying me, but you might be buying some good feelings, you know. You might be buying that. But other than that, I hope you guys have a great Friday night. Excuse me, the Saturday night. God, one day bleeds into the next when you live in Little Saigon. I hope you have a great rest of your Saturday night, and you go out there, and you meet people, and you enjoy yourself. If you see large bodies of water or ponds or a lake or river, just don't get too close, because the grizzly bear shark is out there, people. It's hungry as fuck. It's out there. Happy Saturday night.